Thanks for downloading this episode of the John Curley and Sherry Ellicker Show. Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest. The best place to watch all your favorite sports. Featuring wall-to-wall viewing screens, six windows, and 30 kiosks. Be there at emeraldqueen.com.
It's the John Curley and Sherry Ellicker Show. Greg Tomlin and Jake Skorheim filling in. All right, Jake, I'm going to do my best Curley impression here.
All right.
To kick off the first segment of every hour. What does he do? Here we go. Jumping into some stories that we're going to talk about today.
That's all right. You can't compete with Curley. He's pretty
nailed
good at it.
Yeah,
no, I think you nailed it.
Yeah.
Have you been to Redmond Town Center recently?
You know what? I haven't, but I have. I've heard good things.
I have like doctor's appointments there, but it's a nice place to walk around. I think they have a guitar center there that sometimes I'll pop my head into.
They have. Last time I was there, they had some sort of a nice steakhouse or something.
Oh yeah, they got it all.
Yeah, it's a nice place. Very expensive. It's Microsoft right there.
Beautiful part of town. Yes.
Beautiful.
Nice hotels and all that. Well, just a few minute walk away, the landscape could be changing here. So Tuesday night, dozens of people went to Redmond City Hall to voice support or opposition for a proposed permanent supportive housing project. This is spearheaded by the Plymouth Housing Organization. Project was originally intended to be built where? In Kenmore, but intense opposition led to city leaders tossing out that plan, which I think was appropriate personally. So in February, city leaders in Redmond voted to take the first step necessary for this project to get underway, transferring publicly owned land to Plymouth Housing. And so what does a transfer of publicly owned land entail? Well, no public hearings about it and no vote with the constituency, which they don't have to be clear. But when word of this project got out, it created some dissatisfaction with some Redmond residents. And here's just a little taste of what demonstrators sounded like last night. This audio courtesy of Jonathan Cho.
We do not want to see on our streets something that's happening in Seattle.
The rally is about getting people to have a say. The city council did this without taking any input from the residents, the taxpayers. And they just did it in secret.
So rescind the decision to give the public land to Plymouth Housing.
I know the governor has been very vocal about bringing homeless to all the cities in Eastside because he thinks Eastside should, you know, take the burden of that to help out. However, why should Eastside cities help with the mess that Seattle created for themselves?
So 100 planned units here. People who are low income and just getting out of homelessness, in theory, will be the ones admitted into these units. There will be some guidelines for people that want to live there. 24/7 staffing. There's a code of conduct that addresses threatening behavior, having weapons, alcohol, marijuana usage, along with using and selling illegal drugs. Final program rules and conduct will be reviewed and approved by the Redmond Police Department, Jake.
Can we go back to one thing that you mentioned earlier? And I'm not fully grasping this, but you said that there was a land transfer that happens. So explain to me. So are they just giving this land to, or they're making it available to
the city? Owns the land.
The city owns the land, and it was originally bought for light rail purposes. Is that right?
I believe so. That's part of the story, right?
So it was originally owned for or bought for light rail purposes,
this is about a 3-minute walk from Redmond Town Center. It's right across the street from Anderson Park there in Redmond. There's a Dough Zone dumpling house, which is delicious, by the way, just across the street here. So it's a major hub of activity in this area where they're proposing to put in this housing project. And rightfully so, there's some trepidation on the part of some people who live in the area or frequent the area.
The part that jumps out at me that really would – I don't live in Redmond – you know, obviously I don't get down there much, but I know it's a beautiful area. Kind of the thing that people say a lot of times, like when we're here in Seattle, like we work in Seattle, and oftentimes we will say, why don't they have these issues? Like Seattle has a lot of issues right now. Seattle has a lot of issues with drug use in public. They have a lot of violent crime. They have a lot of homeless issues that they're dealing with. And Seattle has kind of made itself the place that those things are just going to keep happening. And, yeah. you know, I understand that they recently voted in a lot of new city council members. They're trying to address that issue, but it got pretty bad.
There's here some in moderating going on to a degree.
To a degree.
Yeah.
But everybody kind of goes, you know what? That's why people like the East Side, because they yeah. don't deal with these same issues on the East Side.
But it's metastasized, and these problems are coming whether people like it or not. And here's what I think the bigger issue is, Jake, and that is one-party rule in the state of Washington. And that's not coerced, by the way. Constituents have voted for people who have implemented these policies that are slowly and incrementally, you know, having been injurious to these various towns, whether it's Seattle or now more and more on the East Side. The key here is we need more strict enforcement of laws, drug use, camping, other crimes, forcing people into treatment, even against their will. I think involuntary is part of this. But the burden that lawlessness has had on our region on law-abiding citizens necessitates a change in course, but people aren't voting for it. I mean, let's be clear. There's a few demonstrators outside Redmond City Hall here, but whether it's state senators, state representatives, or city council members, I mean, you get what you vote for. And so I think, you know, I've been in and around talk radio for 16, 17 years. I've heard constant complaints about the leaders in this area, particularly from people that lean to the right, again, because we've had blue party rule for decades and decades. I think there needs to be a change of tactic if you really want conditions to change in the region. I think we have to start just berating the governor all day long, or berating Dow Constantine for how awful and terrible he's made this. These people were voted in, okay? Unless you're persuading the hearts and minds and convincing your neighbors and your community that we need to change course, you're just speaking verbal diarrhea to the masses that's kind of making no impact. I think we need to start again, this is a theme of the first hour, on a much more fundamental level, which is convincing people that what we've done so far is not working. Stop just decrying the people at the top, because they didn't get there by forcing themselves into power yeah. by violence, right? People put them there.
Yeah, no, they were voted in. Yeah, and Jay Inslee, he's not running for a re-election again, so maybe things will change when he's no longer governor. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned, like Washington has had the longest of any state in the country. They've yeah. had the longest run of single-party rule, which I think is like, I don't know, 35 years or something like that.
At least at the very top, yeah. I mean, yeah, there, I mean there's regions out here.
As far as governorship yeah. goes. And so but the thing that jumps out to me about this story that just would drive me crazy, especially if I was living in Redmond, and it's always a red flag for me when something like this goes down, the fact that they did not have to ask people in Redmond what they thought about it, the fact that there was no public comment, like in my neighborhood, I live in Snohomish County.
Yeah.
And anytime there's even a new development going in, you know, and which they're doing now everywhere. They're just finding these big swaths of land. They're clearing trees. They're building houses. I understand that. There's a great need for them. I have no problem with them doing that. But there's always that community notice that they mm-hmm, put out mm-hmm. when these things are being built. You have the opportunity to voice your displeasure, if you want, with sure. one of these places going in. You could talk to your local city officials. You could literally call the companies that are building these big like tracts of homes. But in this case, the city has just given this over. The public, to me, sounds like they're not super excited about this.
At least some of them.
Five of them that showed up to this thing. I don't know how many showed up.
The protest is anecdotal, but what you're making for an argument for here is that the policy needs to be changed, and that whenever there's a land transfer, then the public must be informed, and the city of Redmond would be obligated to open it up for public comment. So you're arguing for a measure that would change that. And obviously, I think you're also hinting at the fact that they probably wanted to implement this housing project quietly, knowing that there might be some disdain for that policy.
So here's the part of the story that I just don't like. And I don't think this is – the city of Redmond needs to answer these questions, because I don't think this is right. Let's see here. According to the city's website, Redmond bought the property in 2019. They're spending tax dollars to do that. That's just – they're not given the property. They bought the property in 2019 to accommodate a light rail alignment project. Now, does that mean that secretly all along they just knew, oh, someday we're not actually going to need this project for anything light rail related? So in 5 years, in 2024, we're just going to sell this to whoever we want to. Not even, and we don't have to ask the public's opinion about
mm-hmm.
it. And that, to me, if I lived in Redmond, I'd be very upset about that because I wouldn't want some of these problems. Like you mentioned, there's a park right there. I left Seattle when my wife and I lived in Seattle. We lived in Green Lake in Seattle.
Yeah.
Until my son was about 6 months old. And my wife was walking my son through Green Lake Park, which has gotten better since we were here. We were here 9 years ago. But she was walking him through Green Lake Park. Kids tend to want to play on the ground when they go into a park or crawl around in the grass. There's needles and stuff on the grass. Mm-hmm. And so that's a problem. And that comes with a lot of times when you have drug use and you have homeless issues in certain areas, it makes it unlivable for the rest of us. And, I can understand that the people in Redmond don't want those problems, which we look at as Seattle problems. We don't want those problems in a place like on the east side. So I think it's totally fair for them to be upset about this. And I think the city of Redmond should answer those questions.
I'm just going to close out this segment with
a
Milton Friedman quote, Jake, incoming. He was an economist and statistician who once said, and I think this does apply to our conversation if we're to ever chart a different course in this region here. Quote,
Which we won't.
Let's be honest. Oh, wow. Thanks for the dramatic music. I do not believe that the solution to our problem is simply to elect the right people. The important thing is to establish a political climate of opinion which will make it politically profitable for the wrong people to do the right thing. Unless it is politically profitable for the wrong people to do the right thing, the right people will not do the right thing either.
Wise words.
Okay. So we can shake our fists on the air, raise our voices, and decry our leaders
or various city councils in the area
and so on. But the fact of the matter is, Jake, that ideology has won the day. It's won over the Northwest. Otherwise, these people wouldn't be in seats of power making
decisions.
Though? Okay, it's easy for us on the radio to say incendiary things, mock our political leaders. But the bottom line is we don't live in a totalitarian, authoritarian, dictatorial state. We have a voice in the matter, and these people represent us. So if we're going to see that different direction, we need to get better at persuading our neighbors that there is a more desirable path to take.
If it can happen in a place like Seattle with the Seattle City Council, which is definitely moving more centrist than it was, and they're more business friendly now. If it can happen in a place like Seattle, then yes, absolutely. And, I don't care if somebody wants to vote Democrat, Republican. I just want people to be focusing on let's make the areas that we live in friendly for families so it's safe for kids. So I don't have to worry about walking my kids around finding needles. That's scary. Any parent knows. That's just frightening.
Pretty basic.
Pretty basic right. stuff. I don't have a lot I'm asking for. It's I don't like fairy lines and I don't like finding needles on the ground.
Yeah.
Those are the things I get really passionate about. Should we talk about drugs really fast? Do we have time to talk about drugs?
Really fast.
Pretty quick here because we got to check in with some traffic here.
I'm always down for a robust dialogue about drugs.
So Jay Inslee, was that just today? Did he sign that thing? Jay Inslee signed that
yesterday.
Yesterday. I'm sorry. He signed 7 new opioid bills, opioid laws into law. Where is this here? Where is this Jay Inslee story? So he signs these into law. And the interesting thing about this is I was just talking about this with my kids this morning, and I was going to ask you about this.
How often do you talk to your kids about fentanyl?
How often do I talk about them?
Do you have toddlers?
Well, they're 8, 6, and 4. I have and I have a fourth son on the way, so he won't need to talk about fentanyl for at least 2 years after he's born.
So, are you one of these dads that gets to your kids early and tries to scare the bejesus out of them into doing the right thing?
I'm evolving. I'm not quite sure what the right path is because again, my kids are really young. I'm just starting to have to do these things. My son, this morning at breakfast, he was telling us this hilarious story about one of his friends in school who found a box of noodles. It was a box of noodles. They found a box of noodles on the ground, and they thought it was hilarious to eat these noodles. Now, that is a weird story, and it's disgusting, and they thought it looked like worms, and that's gross. But the point is, kids pick things up off the ground, and they eat them, and it scared me. And so I don't know what it was. Something triggered in my head. He was like, oh, a box of noodles. I was like, don't eat noodles, one. To my sons, I was like, don't pick
Rule
up things
number
and eat
one
on the ground.
Kids in this household.
Yeah, don't eat noodles
don't eat
off the ground.
Don't eat dry noodles off the ground.
But then,
number two,
the other one was, and
don't
I, this
smoke
was,
fent.
Well, this was a really awkward transition because we're all sitting there having breakfast and they're literally eating their cinnamon toast.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, by the way, guys, also, just to tack on to the noodle conversation, you guys know what fentanyl is? And how do you tell your kids about fentanyl without telling them about it?
I like how you eased into it.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's nice transition. It's because I work in radio. I'm really good at that kind of stuff. So I'm like, listen, guys, by the way, hey, guys, your attention here, buddies. And I'm trying to have this conversation with, 8 down to 4.
Right.
And I'm like, guys, like, you know, when you find stuff on the ground, like the noodles you just were talking about, sometimes there's like other things that you might find on the ground. Like you might find pills and things that look like candy. And we never take candy off the ground, right, guys? And they all kind of like laugh at me. Kids love candy, and they're going to get it. They're going to eat it if they can.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a parent, it freaks me out because we see these stories. Like this fentanyl thing was this law that Jay Inslee just signed into law, one of these seven bills or whatever. He signed them in because there was a kid whose name was Lucas. He was 17 years old at the
time. Smoked marijuana.
He smoked what he thought was just marijuana, and it was laced with fentanyl, and it cost him his life.
Right.
That is a nightmare scenario for parents. And we've done so many stories on my show where we talk about, like, there was kids up in Everett. There was an infant up in Everett who found just a foil that had fentanyl on it in his parents' house and touched the foil, and the toxicity from that sent them to the emergency room. There was another one who died because they found a pill and put it in their mouth. And so as parents, I'm just like, how do you have these conversations with your
terrifying.
Kids?
Terrifying. No, I know. And what I find constantly surprises me as a parent is that whatever issue comes up, there's no guidebook. And every kid is so different.
Yeah.
And you introduce different levels of fear and terror in your kid's mind, depending on what age they are and how mature they are.
Yeah.
I remember this one time my daughter was like 5 years old. So this is 8 years ago. And at that age, it's like the last time you have this blissful ignorance as a child. You don't really understand evil in the world. Maybe you skinned your leg at some point. But I remember looking at her one day when she was relaxing. She had her hands behind her head.
Life is good.
Yes. And I looked at her from afar and I went, she will never be as innocent again in life as she is right at this moment.
It's carefree.
And part of me was sad about that. And then the other part of me said, but I need to teach her about the ways of the world, like, sooner than later, because it'll be a rude awakening.
Yeah.
And so as they age, just a little bit at a time, you kind of ruin their innocence or ruin that ignorance is bliss mentality that they have, whether it's talking to them about drugs at a given age. And I don't begrudge you for what you did. I think you probably made the right choice because, you kind of instilled a little fear in them. But at the same time, that's a healthy fear that is probably going to end up keeping them safe at the end of the day.
I don't want to do it, but I need to do it. Like fentanyl at four over breakfast. Yeah, it doesn't make
me
feel...
Had to be done.
Had to be done, right? You got to make hard choices as a parent.
If you've been thinking about surgery or even joint replacement, here's something to consider. Hi, it's Dave Ross. I've talked to over 100 patients of Dr. Mark Wagner, MD, and many of them have told me about life-changing results. Their words, after treatment at Seattle Swartz and regenerative medicine. These are people with severe osteoarthritis, even bone on bone, and they're back to hiking, jogging, playing tennis, skiing, golfing, walking up and down stairs, playing with the kids and the grandkids, and they're doing it without pain and without surgery. Dr. Wagner's 60-minute outpatient procedure uses your own stem cells, and because they're your own stem cells, they can help regenerate your own cartilage in your own joints. Dr. Wagner is a board-certified Seattle physician. He has over 30 years of experience, and he's performed over 20,000 stem cell procedures. And he's one of the few doing it the right way. So, listen to his patients, and remember, whether it's a shoulder, hip, elbow, ankle, wrist, or knee, before you choose surgery, first see Dr. Mark Wagner, MD. Get the facts. Then get back in the game at drmarkwagnermd.com.
Sign up for Mariners Mail to receive pre-sale offers, exclusive content, and more directly to your inbox for free. Mariners Mail subscribers get first dibs on all the latest ticket news and action from T-Mobile Park. Go to mariners.com/insider to join the club today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the John Curley and Sherry Ellicker Show. Jake Skorheim and Greg Tomlin filling in today. John and Sherry are both off, but they will be back shortly. Don't worry about it. We have a really interesting story right now. If you guys care about the housing market like we do, and if you're interested when all the home prices seem to be skyrocketing, have we got a story for you. Heather Bosch, our very own reporter here at Cairo News Radio, you have a story about the housing market.
Yeah, the median home price increased nearly 8% in the greater Seattle area between January and February, and prices jumped more than 10% in February compared to the year before. So prices again are surging.
And that's just in 1 month?
Yes, that's 1 month in the greater Seattle area and King County. Yeah, this is all according to new numbers from RE/MAX Gateway. I spoke to John Manning. He is a managing broker there, and he tells me one of the reasons for the price increase.
The Seattle area in general tends to have many more buyers than sellers. But that trend has been quite exaggerated in the last several months, and it doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon.
I found this really interesting. Here's how he explains it. He says the real estate industry uses a metric called month of availability. Now, when the metric is balanced between supply and demand for houses, there are 6 months of availability.
In other words, if not another home came on the market from, say, today, it would take 6 months to sell out all the homes that are on the market.
But get this, in the greater Seattle area right now?
We're in a market currently where we have about 2 weeks of homes available.
That is not a lot of homes. So why is this happening? He says there are some natural constraints to the supply of housing here.
Western Washington is somewhat constrained between the Puget Sound and the mountains.
And the region also features low unemployment, good job opportunities.
There's always, generally speaking, more people moving into the region than there are moving out.
And remember, coming out of the pandemic, the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates.
Folks that own homes and had a chance to either secure their homes at low interest or refinance at low interest a couple of years ago, those folks were looking at those mortgage rates and saying, wow, that's an investment I might not get again in a hurry. And so they're reluctant to sell their homes.
Those homes that do come on the market, they are not staying there for long. And in King County, he's seeing multiple bids for homes.
One in Capitol Hill, for example, where there were 16 offers for one home. And that one soared in price to several hundred thousand dollars above its list price.
Bidding wars. He expects home prices to continue to rise through May. Spring does tend to be the busiest time for the housing market, Greg and Jake.
What's amazing about this, do you remember back in, because I wasn't in the housing market until, let's see, we bought our house in June of 2020. Which was a really, as it turns out, a really bizarre time to be in the housing market. Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember what it looked like back then?
Was it like the 2% interest rates then?
Well, it wasn't just that. And yes, the interest rates were insane.
Pandemic too.
And it was after the pandemic. And when we bought our house, it wasn't yet being built yet. And so there was this construction shutdown that also happened. In the middle of building, they said,
right.
Oh, the entire world's shutting down. You're not allowed to build on the premises. And then for like 2 or 3 months until they were given the green light, nobody could build houses. So it created this like weird, artificial, all of these like this perfect storm for making houses super desirable, very expensive. And like because of the low interest rate. A lot of buyers.
Everybody wanted to get a house.
Everybody wanted to get it. So you end up having it. Like I had a friend who bought a house during that time that got like a 2.7% interest rate, which now, what's the interest rate right now? Do you guys know? It's like 7-something.
I feel like it's at least double that. Yeah.
It's up. They raised the Fed raised the benchmark rate that mortgage rates end up following 11 times coming out of the pandemic just to try to get to rein in the inflation that was going crazy. So yeah, it's up higher than it's been in decades.
I feel so bad though for homeowners, especially in Seattle. I mean, it's always going to be a very desirable market as long as we have this like thriving tech industry here. We have so much money in town.
Some people have much money.
Yeah, some people have money. But yeah. The depressing part for people who are looking for a house is, you know, when you go and show up to one of these homes and like that guy said, 16 offers. How do you navigate that?
I mean, my wife and I were fortunate enough to get in our house and purchase it 10, 11 years ago. But we have friends nowadays that are paying higher rent than we pay on our mortgage. Oof. And it makes me extremely saddened for them.
Yeah.
And I look back and I just think, well, we were extremely fortunate and lucky and blessed in so many ways. But it makes me very sad that, you know, buying and owning a home slash property is part of the American dream. And it just seems out of reach for so many people who are coming up in our age group.
Yes.
Jake, that are just perpetually renting because the market is so difficult. And I think, Heather, one of the surprising things for me is that traditional wisdom would say that there's sort of ebbs and flows to the market, or that the housing market is cyclical in many ways. Our first home purchase years and years ago was right before the market crashed.
Back in 2008.
Yeah, and then we got in at a different time and it ended up being okay. Now it just seems like it's just going up and up and up and up with no end in sight.
Exactly.
And so can we throw that traditional wisdom out now? And it's just like, as far as the eye can see, it just feels like there's no end in sight to how high these prices can go in this area.
It's possible. I think what would help is if the mortgage rates come down a little bit. One of the drawbacks is you have people in homes that aren't moving on to that next home because they don't want to pay that high mortgage rate. So there are not a lot of starter homes. I did a story not that long ago about young families, young couples that can't even get that first home because when these starter homes come on the market, there are so few of them.
Just snapped up.
They're snapped up, and often people are demanding cash for them.
You know, that's the other one that just totally confounds me. I don't even know how. So when we were putting in offers for our house back when we, you know, back in 2020, we would go, and like we had been looking since 2019. We finally found one in 2020 after like 6 months of looking, putting in all these offers. It was not uncommon at that time. You'd put in an offer on a house and somebody would go, okay, well, like how much are you willing to go over the price? And because I was new to real estate at the time, I would go, well, what do you mean? Like I'm just offering full price for the house. Isn't it mine now? And they're like, no, you're an idiot. You're going to have to pay at least $100,000 over asking for these houses. And that was happening time and time and time again. People would put these elevator offers in where they would say like, all right, I'm willing to pay this much and I would be willing to go as high as this much. So like I'll go $50,000 over whoever is the next asking offer. And you just get priced out so quickly and there's just nothing you can do.
I don't know if you know the numbers on this, Heather, either, but do you have any data on whether people buying houses currently are Northwest natives or if they've moved here from a different state, even a different country in some instances?
I would hazard to say it's a combination of both because you have people who've grown up in the Northwest who don't necessarily want to move and they got their job at Boeing or Amazon. They want to stay here. So they're bidding on homes. But then you do have an influx. We are constantly, because we have unemployment, because we have these big companies, Starbucks, Microsoft, you know, we have an influx of people constantly who are also looking for those homes. So it is locals, new people to the area, they're all bidding.
Well, and it's anecdotal, but I grew up in the Kirkland area. And so we would frequent Totem Lake because my dad would work at Evergreen Hospital. Totem Lake Mall was nothing to brag about, but there was a little movie theater down there.
Yeah.
We're talking mid-90s,
sure.
Right? But everybody you would encounter there would be a Husky or a Cougar. Like that was it. And there'd be people who lived in the Northwest for 30, 40 years.
They all
and
grew
generationally.
Up here.
I don't know if you've seen the transformation of Totem
it's
Lake
changed.
Recently. It looks like an international hub. I mean, it's massive, you know, not massive sky rises, but there's tons of dynamism and activity. But when I look around, I just think these are imports from all, not just around like other regions of the Northwest, but all over the world have come here. And clearly that's got to have some kind of effect on the housing market too.
And it's a lot of tech jobs. It's a
tons
lot of, like,
of tech
high
jobs.
Paying,
yeah.
High paying. The other thing, and the thing that I just keep coming back to, and I think we'll just like keep making this a problem. What you mentioned earlier, you guys bought a house, you probably had a lower interest rate, just like we did. We got fortune on a lower interest rate. I look around now and I go like, hey, I could actually make some money on my house if I sold it. But if I want to buy another house at double the interest rate, no, thank you.
So our neighbors who lives four houses down just put his house up on the market. And I was like, darn, you know, just when we were starting to get to know our neighbors. And I drove past him the other day. He was doing some work on the house. And I said, hey, how's it coming? Is this thing? He's like, it sold at the snap of a finger. He's moving to Graham, Washington. A little cheaper living. So,
that's
his solution.
Yeah, you can't stay in the same area unless you,
area.
You know, just have a ton of money and you underbought the first time. Yeah. It's crazy. And, you know, this region, we're blessed in so many ways because we have all these great industries. But it also makes it really, really expensive.
The two-sided coin. Yeah,
for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. More on the website, mynorthwest.com.
Check it out. Heather Bosch's story. Heather, thank you so much for coming in.
Anytime.
Thank you.
If you've been thinking about surgery or even joint replacement, here's something to consider. Hi, it's Dave Ross. I've talked to over 100 patients of Dr. Mark Wagner, MD, and many of them have told me about life-changing results. Their words, after treatment at Seattle Swartz and regenerative medicine, these are people with severe osteoarthritis, even bone on bone, and they're back to hiking, jogging, playing tennis, skiing, golfing, walking up and downstairs, playing with the kids and the grandkids, and they're doing it without pain and without surgery. Dr. Wagner's 60-minute outpatient procedure uses your own stem cells, and because they're your own stem cells, they can help regenerate your own cartilage in your own joints. Dr. Wagner is a board-certified Seattle physician. He has over 30 years of experience, and he's performed over 20,000 stem cell procedures. And he's one of the few doing it the right way. So, listen to his patients, and remember, whether it's a shoulder, hip, elbow, ankle, wrist, or knee, before you choose surgery, first see Dr. Mark Wagner, MD. Get the facts. Then get back in the game at drmarkwagnermd.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
John Curley and Sherry Elliker Show. Greg Tomlin and Jake Skorheim here today.
For 53 years and how many locations, Andrew?
16 locations.
16 locations. Bucky's Auto Supply. It's the best place to go get your Bucky's Service Centers. Best place to go get your service centers for your cars. Bucky's. Nailed it. All right, Greg, what are we talking about this segment?
Male college students do the darndest things, Jake. File this under the macabre or morbid stories of the day. And I want to give this guy who's got the surname Chang, who lived in Taiwan, points for creativity, minus points for stupidity and insanity. So he had the brilliant idea of carrying out an insurance fraud scheme. Mm-hmm. What could go wrong here? So what he decides to do is, all right, I'm going to immerse myself in a big bucket of dry ice.
Naturally.
For many minutes.
Hours.
Oh, hours,
yeah,
in fact.
Hours.
You do the math.
Yeah, hours.
So much so that my legs are going to go numb, I'm going to get frostbite, and then my legs are going to have to be amputated. And what I'll do is, after my legs are amputated, I'll try to get compensation from 8 insurance policies that I took out, totaling $1.3 million, and I'll cite injuries sustained while riding a scooter, and none will be the wiser.
So this story is really insane. I hadn't seen this, you guys sent this to me, and basically what he does is, and it sounds like, do you guys know those movies, the Saw movies, have you guys heard of those?
I've only seen the posters.
It's like torture porn is kind of how they describe them. This sounds exactly like that to me. So what he did was, in his 20s or something? He's a young
college
guy.
Student.
Yeah, dumb. So what he does is So he and a friend get together and they come up with this bright idea. They're like, yeah, we can do this insurance fraud. The problem is that he has to figure out how to get his legs amputated for this to work, which feels like a high risk to me, but I guess he didn't feel like it was. And so he paid his friend, or I guess his friend was in cahoots with him. He and his friend go to some location. They buy a bunch of dry ice. They get back to the house. His friend then uses like piano wire or something to...
trigger warning for the kids.
Well, no,
the
there's no kids
here.
Listening to this right now. Okay. But if there were, it is scary. Don't do this at home. He then ties him to a chair, immerses his feet in dry ice for like 10 hours so that the idea is that he can then go into the hospital. And so, he would struggle, which is why they tied him up. And so then he goes to the hospital and he says, I've got frostbite in Taipei from driving around on my moped. And he has his legs amputated. So that part of it worked. But then except when he gets the insurance
company. The minor detail at the end, which is the insurance company denied the claim due to suspicions arising from the proximity of the policy purchase dates to the filing of the claims.
Yeah, which is like the day before he has to have his legs cut off.
Failhorn.com.
Isn't that crazy?
I don't think there's any amount of money I would accept to lose a limb.
To make yourself
an appendage, a phalange, even my pinky finger. Is so precious to me, Jake.
There's no amount
for $100,000. No way.
For your pinky.
No way.
How often are you using it?
Well, I shred on guitar, so
this is
my
useless
bread and butter.
My hands are nearly useless to me in the radio industry. I could just do this all day.
How do you come up with a scheme like this?
Obviously, we can't because we've seen too many horror movies.
I guess didn't work.
It did not work.
Don't try it at home.
He was unsuccessful. He wasn't able to get the insurance money. But now he's just got no legs. I don't recommend this. I don't mean to laugh at
somebody. That's your consolation, but yeah, we shouldn't.
Yeah,
I
don't recommend this to anybody at home. Don't.
This is a serious
tie yourself up and put yourself in dry ice and try to insurance fraud. It's a bad idea.
Again, it's news you can use.